The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we got a great guest for you here. It's a guy who is, he's just gung-ho. He is not only is he a proud member of the service and has given his life for our country and as a member of the U.S. Army, but he is continuing to help other veterans. And let me tell you a little bit about him. His name is Joe Riley. And as a captain in the U.S. Army, Joe Riley has had multiple overseas deployments and previously served on the National Security Council at the White House. Joe is also the founder of Patriot Family Homes, a company that meets the need for short-term housing near military bases. They are a veteran-owned and operated company transforming the short-term vacation rental industry by bringing professional management to small towns and big cities alike. They are uniquely positioned to partner with passive real estate investors looking to access short-term rentals cash flow without all the headaches of managing them. Well, Joe, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thanks so much. So glad to be here.
And I also want to thank you for your service as well. Man, it sounds like you've been doing some great things.
Well, I tell all the taxpayers that I appreciate my salary. Put food on my table for a little while.
that's awesome. Well, this sounded so interesting when I first heard about it. And, I've been involved in Airbnb for years and some, so I know short-term, I know long-term rental. And, but I didn't really even think of, this need for housing for military families that sometimes just have to get up and go. Give us your background. Where are you from, and how you got into real estate, and the service and so forth.
Absolutely. So as we were talking, I'm from a little town in East Tennessee, next to the mountains, and went to UVA for undergrad and on a ROTC scholarship, and then did the Army stuff afterwards. Actually went over to Oxford in the UK, where I did a master's and PhD in international relations, and then came back and started on the kind of cycle of Army moves every 12 months my wife and I did. And so I think we moved 7 or 8 times in 7 years. And on one of my deployments, Rachel travels for work Monday through Friday. So we just decided to throw our house up on Airbnb and see how it would do. We were stationed down at Fort Benning in Columbus, Georgia at the time. And it took off and realized, no surprise in hindsight, there's a huge need for furnished temporary housing around military bases with families kind of constantly going around. And in the case of Fort Benning, coming in for basic training, graduation, and airborne and ranger school and all the other good stuff. So came back and started getting a couple more houses, still going well, and took out my first big loan. And as soon as I did and we closed on the houses, the Army said, surprise, you're going to Ukraine.
Oh, man.
So I thought, this is how I go bankrupt, because how am I going to manage these very operationally intensive short-term rental properties from a shipping container in rural Ukraine? Luckily, one of the guys I was deploying with, his wife, who'd actually been a West Point grad herself, and then now an Army spouse, said, look, I'm staying behind and I'll take care of the place. And that really kind of unlocked what has been our secret sauce of relying on military spouses, now also veterans, but predominantly military spouses, to kind of manage our markets. Mill spouses need portable, flexible employment that kind of allows them to move around and raise their families and still contribute. And so they've got a great community on the team there. The Marine Corps has kind of taken over. We started out as this great Army organization, and this, a couple of Marine Corps spouses infiltrated the ranks and have just completely, taken over the show.
Oh, man.
But so we've grown. And so we went, basically we kind of moved from base to base as we would move around. And would add new houses, and then, realized, that it was not just military bases. It's also university towns. We were in Columbia, South Carolina, which has a great base there at Fort Jackson, but also has, obviously University of South Carolina, and picked up a lot of university traffic. And then we were in another town that had a lot of, kind of blue collar tourism in Savannah, Georgia, where the 1st Ranger Battalion is. But then, a lot of people come down there for tourism. So we then just kind of spread out from there. And so now we run from Pennsylvania up in the Poconos all the way down to Texas and most of the kind of along the way in between. And we, own, manage, and lease in an arbitrage model, a mixture of predominantly single family, but also some smaller multifamily properties that we run as short-term rentals. And, I tell people the difference between what we do, we say we're the Walmart of short-term rentals, right? We're not the million-dollar beach home, though we do absolutely manage, some very nicer properties. But in terms of what we own in our own portfolios, is more kind of, run-of-the-mill houses that cater to, families traveling on a budget, groups of plumbers or electricians traveling around who need a, temporary accommodations, and it's more affordable to do that than staying in a bunch of hotel rooms. That's what we say. We're nothing fancy schmancy, but we think we provide a great service to people who need, kind of affordable accommodations. And we offer a great return on, we find that our owners get a great return on investment. We tell people we target hotel style cap rates with a single family backstop is the kind of way that we describe what we do.
Mm, wow. That's a pretty amazing story there. Maybe you can give me a little background here, because I'm not, wasn't in the military and don't have a military background or family, with housing for soldiers coming in and their families on base. I mean, there's housing that's provided. Is that correct?
Yes. So depending on the base you're at, they may have a lot of on post housing or very little on post housing. And then it's always the service members. The service member always has the choice to live off post. Sometimes they have to live off post just because there's not adequate on post housing. So if you show up, if you're moving from, Fort Lewis out in Seattle, Washington, down to, Fort Bragg in North Carolina, and you show up and then you need a place to stay for a little while you're waiting for your on post, permanent on post housing to come available. Or you're going to live off post and you're waiting to close on a new house and you've got a couple weeks, before the house closes. Those are the kind of families that in that kind of temporary flex space. And then the military does a lot of what we call TDY, temporary duty travel. So soldier stationed at Fort Benning, training at Fort Bragg, needs a place to stay. So yeah, kind of a mix of different things. And then just families coming in to visit, you know, for the holidays or particularly around training bases. You know, these are big life moments when a service member graduates from basic training or from airborne school. And so you see, you know, not just parents, but siblings and grandparents and aunts and uncles and, you know, big families travel for these big moments and, you know, much more affordable for them to do it in a house as opposed to a bunch of hotel rooms. And then, you know, they've got a kitchen that's fully furnished so mom can cook a, you know, great meal for the family. So that's a little bit of kind of what we're targeting, at least around military bases.
Gotcha. So the on-base housing, is that, I mean, provided at no cost to, you know, the folks that stay there? Or is it, you know, is it handled by like per diem, or how is that taken care of?
So for your permanent housing in the military, if you're staying on post, then yes, that's, you know, that's covered. You don't pay anything for that. If you go off post, then the military gives you what they call basically a housing allowance of a certain amount of money. Inside the U.S., that's a, you know, say your stipend is $1,800 a month and you only spend $1,000 a month, then you get to keep the extra $800. So that's how it works if you go off post. And that can be used to pay rent, or if you buy your own home, to pay mortgage, utilities, you know, tax, you know, whatever you want to. It's just a supplemental stipend that you receive.
Gotcha. So your pricing for the most part would, you know, have to fall into that.
Not necessarily, because we're not providing long-term accommodations, right? We're providing temporary furnished, utilities included. So again, all of our properties are on Airbnb and VRBO, just like what you would think about in a vacation market. And then we have our own website and our own direct channels. But no, we would not be, you know, so in a temporary status, and the Army gives you, or the military gives you a separate per diem, as you were mentioning, in a temporary housing stipend that's higher than what the long-term permanent housing stipend would be.
And so what's sort of the average stay for that?
Our length of stays are really bimodal between the like weekend, 3-4 day stays. Let's call it trimodal, like a weekend, you know, 2-3 day stay. Then you have like this group that are kind of waiting in a shorter term status on like a 7 day, let's call it 7 day, 2 week time horizon. And then we actually do a lot of insurance work. So let's say your house burns down or has water damage or something like that. The insurance company has to pay to put you up. Insurance companies are pretty price insensitive. So, you know, in those instances, you know, you're usually getting $5,000-$6,000 a month for, you know, a $200,000 house. And, you know, they may stay for 3, 4 months, 5 months, something like that.
It sounds like you've also broadened out sort of beyond military in some areas. Would you say what percentage of your actual guests or you know, tenants, however you want to refer to them, what percentage are strictly military?
So it's going to be very market dependent. So in a place like Columbus, Georgia, or Clarksville, Fort Campbell, you know, I'd say we're like 75 plus percent, some connection to the military. They may be a contractor coming in to do a job for the military. So maybe a civilian working for the military or family or something like that. In a non-military market, in a kind of what we would call our kind of blue-collar vacation destination sites, that's, you know, probably maybe 10-15% military. So very market-dependent.
Gotcha. You mentioned that the military wives in a lot of cases are sort of doing the back end. Is that just cleaning, you know, sort of turnovers, or is that also the management, you know, dealing with the, you know, the inquiries and you know, sign-ins, you know, check-ins, check-outs, and so forth?
Yeah, so kind of across the board, everything from our head of acquisitions is a, you know, or director of acquisitions is a military spouse, all the way down to, you know, some cleaners are definitely military spouses. Some of our handy, you know, maintenance style folks are from military families. And then basically all of our, what we would call guest communications or reservation specialists who work on that piece of it are all military spouses.
Wow. So that's a pretty, I mean, their back end is covering everything. I mean, that it's got to be nice for you because it frees you up from, you know, to be able to look at the bigger picture and growth and funding and all the other areas where you, I'm sure you direct your energy. But that seems like it's also a huge operation.
Oh yeah. So we've got about 50 employees.
Wow.
And we quadrupled four or five decks in size last year, and looking on a path for a similar trajectory for 2022. We've got a pretty big team. We have our own warehouses, where we store all of our furniture. So we get furniture from two places. So in addition to just managing the homes, we're a full, soup to nuts operation. So most of our, we take a lot of people if they have an individual home who they bring us a home that maybe it's already set up or it's a long-term rental, they want to convert it to a short-term rental. But we also work with larger investors who may want to put $10, $20 million to work. And for those investors, they're coming in, we identify the markets, we go out, find the homes, close on the homes. We have an in-house renovation oversight team. We have our own warehouses where we store all the furniture. So then after it's renovated, we'll load up trucks, send them down there, fully furnish the home, and then, manage the home on the back end on a kind of go forward basis. We get our furniture from, we work with hotel liquidators. So let's say a Marriott's changing out their line, we'll send in trucks and, pick up all of the furniture and stuff. And then my grandfather in, Bill, you'll like this, just in Etowah has a great Christian training center for men leaving prison or recovering from drug and alcohol addictions.
Wow.
And so we built them a wood shop, and one of the skills they learn while they're there is they learn woodworking. And so we support that ministry by having them build a lot of the furniture that we put in our homes.
That's neat. Wow.
So it's a very expansive logistical nightmare of an operation, but that's what the military is good at, is taking on large logistical challenges.
Exactly, and then you've already got the mindset right, and so it I can see that being. I mean, I've got like five, or actually, I guess we're up to six properties, that we're managing, and it drives me crazy. I can't imagine how many different properties do you have?
We've got about 350 now.
Oh my goodness!
Targeting to be at 1,000 by the end of the year. So
that's amazing, Joe. Wow. That is just, amazing. Wow. So that is a big operation. And, are you encountering, especially in the more heavily tourist areas, some, issues where they're not allowing, short-term rentals or Airbnb?
Yeah. I'd actually say it's less than the vacation area. Less in the vacation areas and then more so in some of your kind of cities that have some tougher exploring tougher regulations on the short-term rental market. If you look at a footprint of our markets, we are in typically more red states where even if they local governments are doing some things, oftentimes the state legislature, has various right to rent laws and so forth that, minimize the extent to which a local government can just come in and say, you can't do this. That said, regulations are always something that we're having to kind of, we've got a whole team in house that does nothing but licensing and permitting.
Wow.
And, some places super simple, no challenges, very easy, may not even have to have a permit. Other places, it is a, extremely involved process to get your permit.
Right. Wow. You've taken on a huge, huge effort. You also mentioned arbitrage too. You're helping people that have existing properties. with you know, filling them up with the people that are fed from your machine, so to speak?
So we will do. So when we work with other property owners, one of two models: either one, we can just come in and manage, and they just pay us a management fee to do that. And we offer two management packages. We offer a full service and then a digital only package. The digital only package is available anywhere. So you could reach up and say, I'm in Lake Tahoe and I want help with my, and we'll do the digital management anywhere. For the full service, it either has to be within our existing geographic footprint, or we say you have to have 5 with a pathway to 10 for us to be able to justify like starting to put together the on the ground infrastructure, to manage the thing, you know, the full scale operations, including cleaners and maintenance and all of that. So that's on the management side. The other option we do is we do run what we call a master lease or rental arbitrage model, where we'll go to a landlord and say, give you a 5-year lease, sometimes 3 years, we like 5 years, and guarantee your rent each month. You don't have to worry about turnover. You know, we kind of take care of ourselves. But then, you know, if I'm paying $2,000 a month in rent and I only make $1,800 a month, then, you know, I lose $200. If I go out and make $6,000 and I make $4,000. So that's the kind of two models, depending on how risk averse or acceptant, you know, or how much hands-on versus wanting to be hands-off the property owner is.
And in those cases, are they generally apartment buildings you're approaching, or hotels? How do you do that?
So we don't do hotels. Mm-hmm. We will do, you know, portions of apartment buildings. We'll do some kind of bed and breakfast style in type things, and then just traditional single family.
Gotcha. And your digital service, is that more sort of the front desk function, you know, taking the calls, bookings, answering questions, obviously online or, you know, via telephone? Does that team also coordinate the cleaning crews in these other areas?
So what the digital only so it pushes out across all the different platforms and channels and everything else that we have. We then manage all inquiries, booking, pricing, reservations, calendar management, you know, making sure you don't have double bookings if you're on cross multiple platforms. So we handle all of basically everything until the guest shows up. And then from the time the guest hits the door, they're then the owner's responsibility. So that's the kind of demarcation. In terms of cleaning, you know, we don't find the cleaners. We don't train the cleaners. We're not responsible if the cleaners don't do a good job. But what we will do is we'll get them set up with access to our software, and they can then, you know, see when a guest is coming and going and get notifications. And so in that sense, we help coordinate because we provide an ability for the cleaner to get the notifications. But if the cleaner shows up late or doesn't clean or does a bad job of cleaning or anything like that, you know, we're not at 10 o'clock at night when the guest shows up and is unhappy that there's, you know, hairs in the bed or, you know, pet fur on the couch or whatever it else might be, then we don't get involved there. That's between the owner and the cleaner and the guest.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Wow. That is quite an operation. How in the world? Okay. You kind of told the story. You had a house and you rented it out and it went well. And then you started adding other houses. What were some of the mistakes that you encountered in the beginning and that you really learned from later on?
We've learned a lot about kind of which types of properties do well versus not. The biggest lesson we learned, none of it was a mistake, but we just learned is that I think people think Airbnb, huge house on the beach in Destin, right? Or amazing loft in downtown LA. And those are definitely Airbnbs, but, you know, that's not the only type of Airbnb. So one of the biggest is learning how much of a need there is out there for, you know, what we call the kind of Walmart style you know, of Airbnb, of just functional, you know, economical accommodations and markets all around the country. So that's one lesson learned. And then the other one is, you know, you really have got to be on multiple platforms. You've got to be running smart pricing. You've got to be, you know, really kind of pushing to get, you know, turnover faster. You know, don't have like a couple day blocks between stays. And to do that, you know, you've kind of got to have an operational infrastructure. You know, I was about burnout. My wife and I, we did our first, I guess we had like 5, 6, you know, as I mentioned, and then I was getting ready to deploy. And I was like, this is a disaster, right? I mean, there's a problem every weekend. People are caught, you know, like it was like the opposite of passive income, right? Short-term rentals are not passive income if you're running them yourselves, right? They are a very active form of income. And so I basically had to decide, did I want to give up the cash flow and go back to long-term rentals? Did I want to, you know, hire some other management company or just build my own? And so, you know, we just decided to build our own, which I think was the right decisions. You know, sometimes I ask myself, you know, I think what most people will find is if you have one or two houses, particularly if you live in the local area, you can manage, you know, you can manage them yourselves. You may not be optimizing your revenue and everything else because you may not be quite, you know, not a knock, but you may just not be as sophisticated in pricing and some other things as what a larger scale operator is. But from an operation standpoint, you can operate it. You start getting up certainly to 5 or more than that, somebody's doing it full time, you know, whether it's you, spouse, friend, you know, that's the biggest thing I would say is to just recognize that short-term rentals are not passive income. If you hire a management company, they can be passive income, but if you're running them yourselves, they are not passive.
Yeah, good point. Good point. And what would you say is sort of your biggest success since you got started?
Relying on military spouses.
Now tell me about that. So your typical military spouse, if there is such a thing, right? I kind of picture them, yeah, because the most men are fairly younger. They're going to be younger kids, right? They're going to be dealing with as well. Is that proposed, you know, challenges there?
We have everything from, we have several. I mean, we've got a couple of people who work for us that, you know, husbands were, you know, 20, 25 years in the service and either maybe still in or retired now. So they're obviously at a different point in life than, you know, but yes, to answer your question, I would say that, you know, the majority of military spouses that work for us are in their kind of 30s. I would guess as a general range. But again, you have everything from very young military spouse, maybe they don't have kids yet, all the way up through, you know, kids are already graduating out of the house. So
you've got the range there. It's just, I know with short term, it's, you can have there are always changes, you know, that you have a schedule, but the schedules are always changing, right?
Oh, yes.
And so, you know, they've got to be able on a dime to be able to, you know, get to that place, and they've got that little time frame to get it clean before the next person checks in. If you have the same day check-ins, right?
Yes.
So, that seems like that'd be definitely, it could be a challenge, but you probably have backup people too. So you're, covered, but you're in so many different markets. That's gotta be really amazing to be able to coordinate.
We have sacrificed. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, we're in 27 different markets, I think now, you know, we could, you know, instead of having 350 doors spread across 27 markets, you know, we'd be way better off if we had that same number of properties spread across 7 or 8 markets, you know, or even, you know, 5 or 6 markets. But we have intentionally been willing to spread ourselves thin because then when a capital partner comes to us and says, hey, I want to go put $20 million to work. The biggest risk you have in short-term rentals, as you alluded to earlier, is regulatory risk. And so if you put all of your houses in one market and they change the rules, you know, kind of between a rock and a hard place.
Right.
What we allow investors to do is to come and say, I want to put X amount of money to work and I want you to spread me out across your portfolio so that I get diversification and risk mitigation. So, you know, we have intentionally, on the management company side, you know, sacrificed short-term gains in order to put in place a more broad operational infrastructure that can absorb larger chunks of capital without having to concentrate an individual investor's risk into a single market.
And what kind of return, I know it's hard to say, you know, in each situation, but what kind of a sort of average or range would an investor expect to see in an operation like this?
Our existing cap rate is on our current portfolios in the kind of low to mid teens for a cap rate.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
So in a single family, typically in single family rentals these days, you're seeing cap rates in the, you know, mid single digits, if not low single digits. So we're much higher on a cap rate, and that's after you pay for, you know, account for the management fees and cleaning and utilities and lawn care and all the other stuff. An analogy I give is like, I'll give it in the rental arbitrage context. So I can go out and get a, you know, let's say Birmingham, Alabama, and I can get a run-of-the-mill 3-2 house or something like that in a kind of transitioning neighborhood for $1,000 a month in rent. And then I can turn around and do $3,500 a month on average as a short-term rental. And I've probably got an extra, you know, $1,400 or so in expenses, so about $1,100 a month or so net benefit from it, if short-term versus long-term. Step up to a $2,000 a month rental, and I can get $6,000 or $7,000. So now I'm going to $4,000 or $5,000 spread. And then step up again to like a $3,000, $3,200 a month rental, and it's like $11,000 a month. So the arbitrage is greater as you step up to nicer, in most markets, as you step up to larger and nicer properties, because, you know, if you're looking to buy, you know, if you're looking, you know, those bigger, nicer properties often don't make sense for a long-term rental, right? Because the cost basis in the asset is too high. And, you know, there's less of a market to rent those sort of properties on a long-term basis because the people who have the money to pay that in rent often buy their own home. So that's a little bit of where the kind of arbitrage. So the best types of properties are those big, what we call like large houses in urban cores, and then small multifamily, particularly like even if it's a main house and like a casita in the back or bungalow or mother-in-law suite. Because then you don't have two listings, you have, or even one listing, you have three listings, right? You have the main house, you have the casita, and then you have the two together. The casita can go to traveling nurses and people are looking for longer term stays. The bigger house goes to, you know, larger groups. So you touch multiple different points in the demand curve, and as a result, you can increase your average nightly rate substantially without having a, you know, comparable reduction in occupancy. So those are then the second types of properties. And the other thing is institutional buyers, you know, the big guys who are, you know, they don't like a lot of these more odd properties. So they kind of filter out in the kind of hyper bidding wars, particularly in some of your more prime markets.
Right. Well, you've touched on it here, so maybe we'll dig a little bit deeper here. You know, we have our folks that are our target audience that are 50 years of age or older, and they're approaching retirement or already in retirement, and they're looking for opportunities. Some of them might want to maybe buy some homes near a military base. Others, you know, might be interested in the investment aspect of it. What advice would you have for those folks?
Yeah, I would say, you know, definitely understand the first thing I would say to somebody that's in that kind of older category is understand, is this a purely investment property or is it a property you might want to use yourself, right? Because And it's, I think, very important to distinguish those two, because, you know, you may say, I want to have a beach home in on Tybee Island. And if it makes some money, great. If it breaks even, great. But I want a beach house in Tybee because I want to go spend a part of the year there. That's one set of investment. And absolutely, when you're not using it, you should run it as a short-term rental and, you know, break even on cost or even make some money. Versus you just say, don't ever care if I go to this house, no interest in it other than the cash flow off of it. That's another sort of property. Typically what I find is if you're wanting the best return on investment from the, from a cash flow standpoint, are going to be, you know, in some sort of market that we call it cheap real estate markets that have a lot of churn. So, you know, some of our markets, we like Pensacola, Florida a lot, right? We're not in Destin. We like Pensacola. You got a Navy base there. You've still got the beach. So you've got beach traffic, but it's not the Destin prices to buy the property. Similar, you know, in Savannah, you know, where we go. Savannah is one of our other markets that we like a whole lot. We don't buy stuff out on Tybee typically. We buy stuff like one island or two back that's between downtown and Tybee, and, you know, the asset prices are a lot cheaper. So that's a little bit of an idea of kind of how I would advise people to think about it is like, is this a property that you want to use for your own vacations and recreation? In which case, you know, there's a different set of considerations beyond just what the cash flow off of it is, or is this purely an investment property?
Great. Now, what about folks that are just interested in getting a good return on, you know, maybe they're investing their from their nest egg? What are you looking at in terms of commitment and, you know, what kind of an investment are you looking at?
You're asking what we would do if someone came to us and said, hey, I want to put $500,000 to work. How would we help them do that?
Right.
Yeah. So we would, you know, we would ask that first question that I asked you of, you know, is this something you want to use for yourself or only a return? If only a return, then what we have is basically a menu of properties that our underwriters are going through on a weekly basis. And, you know, we make that available to all of our different investors and they can just go off and pick one. You know, maybe they pick a house in Montgomery, Alabama, or they pick one in Mobile, or they pick one in San Antonio, Texas, or, you know, and so they then have that flexibility to go in and kind of choose from the menu, and then we'll go out and close on the house, make an assignable contract, assign it to them, and then kind of take it from there. If you know, so that's kind of how we approach it, is we ask people to come to us and let us know, you know, what are you looking to put to work? Is it going to be cash only? Or are you looking to lever? If you're looking for leverage, then, you know, depending on the state, we can connect you with a lender, or, you know, bring your own kind of pre-qualification letter. And then we go to market with that and go out and buy the number of homes or asset value that the investor's targeting.
Now, let's say somebody comes to you, let's say they have $100,000. You know, I don't know what kind of house you could really get for $100,000 that would be a, you know, that would fit the model you're talking about. But would you ever bring investors together and say, hey, we'll get five guys with $100,000, on a property or something like that?
We don't do syndications. Certainly, I know a lot of other people do. You know, if a group came to us and said, we've got this pool that we work with other people who we've got several investors who they had a kind of pre-existing group of friends that they'd already pooled together. And, you know, I think we bought them seven or eight different houses. But we don't do the legal infrastructure of putting all of that together. Now, if you had $100,000 that you wanted to put to work and you're willing to, you know, take out a loan, even for only 50 or 60%, then, you know, our average home cost base is about 220, 225.
Oh, really? That low? Okay.
Got it. Yeah. So we are, I know out in California, that may sound shocking.
That's like a garage here. Not even a garage, a driveway.
In a lot of the tertiary and secondary markets where we operate, you can get I'll put it this way. We have $150,000 houses that make $40,000 a year all day long, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's we target a minimum of 25% of the asset value in annual revenue. So $200,000 house, we want to make minimum $50,000 a year to look at it.
Now, would that be a home that you guys would manage, like after your expenses, or is that if they do the whole thing themselves?
No. We would, again, we'd provide full service management.
That's great.
It's in one of our markets. So if somebody came to us and said, I got a $100,000 house and I've got $100,000 that I want to put to work, or even, I've got $80,000 I want to put to work and I've got a pre-approval on a loan. We would say, typically the furniture to go in the house is about $20,000. We tell people to make sure you set aside, to be safe, if assuming no reno, $25,000, and kind of set up and launch expenses, furniture and stuff of that sort. Let's say they say I've got $75,000. We'd say, okay, $50,000 of that can go towards a down payment. You get a 75% loan to value loan. You can go buy a $200,000 house. You get your $25,000 left over for furniture and setup. And then, we would manage it for them, from there.
And that'd be soup to nuts, right? I mean, everything.
Soup to nuts. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The majority of people who come to us say, I had a guy today call me and say he's got $600,000. He wants to put to work, doesn't care where the homes are, send him stuff. And that's pretty typical of the folks that we work with.
And you put, like, for your homes that you do have that you're underwriting and so forth, you put together, sort of pro forma for that property, mm-hmm. what you expect it to yield and so forth. And is that something that's on your site that people can go to, or is that only after they've signed up with you?
Yeah, that would only be kind of after they've signed up with us. I mean, if somebody brought us an existing home, we could do a quick, pro forma on it. But if they want us to kind of start from scratch doing the underwriting and kind of get access to all of our inventory and stuff that our underwriters are pulling and running, then we ask them to sign up. And we have two different agreements. We have a, kind of management agreement that covers all of the day-to-day management once the property's live. And then we have an acquisitions and setup agreement that basically covers for us to go and acquire, if they want us to go out and find a home, acquire it, close on it for them, oversee the renovations, set up all that stuff.
Do you have licensed brokers on your team that handle that, or agents?
So we always work with a local agent in whatever market. I'm a real estate agent myself, but I'm obviously not licensed in all the states where we operate. So we always have a local agent on the ground that represents us or any of our buyers.
Wow. Well, this is amazing. You have found a niche here that is so unique, and yet at the same time, it just seems like it's just very profitable too, which is great. What's excites you about the future of your company?
I think what I'm most excited about, there was a Wall Street Journal article today that came out about, and we're seeing this, and we went from, kind of having individual people approach us to now, some larger institutional names that many people of your listeners would have heard of that are wanting to get into the space. So we are so excited as all of this, larger kind of, I think that the short-term rental market is today where the long-term rental market was in kind of 2009. It's just not been kind of consolidated and not a ton of sophistication. And so we see a tremendous opportunity to the kind of soup to nuts infrastructure that we've put in place that larger institutional investors are looking for. We think this is just going to be a kind of a great couple of years to put a lot of that to work.
That's great. Where do you see the company going? Or do you have, a goal for the next 10, 20 years down the road?
Yeah, we'd like to be 1,000 homes by the end of this year, by the end of 2024, we'd like to be at 5,000 homes. And then 5 years from now, so kind of 2027 timeframe, we'd like to be at 25,000 homes.
God, that's amazing. That is really great. That is awesome. Wow. Our time is zipping by here, and I'm sure I could talk to you another couple hours here, but got to respect the listeners who are expecting a fixed time here. But we have a section we call our Wrap It Up. And in that, I ask you a series of quick questions and you share resources that have been of value to you. So if you are ready, we can go ahead and wrap it up.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, favorite real estate book?
Never read one.
I love it.
I'm not. That's just the honest truth. I get asked that a lot. I've actually never read one.
Oh my goodness, that is great. That's great. Maybe it's been an advantage for you, I'll tell you. Okay, how about just a general business book that's been of value?
And I guess this one you could throw in the real estate category, but Rich Dad Poor Dad, I think it's just a great way to kind of think about the world and how you utilize your time and resources and talents.
Yeah, and it's definitely mindset too, definitely. How about a valuable website that you use on a regular basis that works for you?
Price Labs, which is where we helps us with a lot of our pricing.
Oh, tell me about that for those that aren't familiar with it.
So it's a series of kind of pretty it's a basically you buy access to a bunch of different algorithms and stuff that you can run on your pricing. It's not a set it and forget it. I mean, there's still a ton of customizations that you put into it, but it's a bunch of developers that, have kind of done the backing coding that you can choose your, and customizations, again, different for different types of homes, different types of markets, but all of that coding has been done and you can kind of on the front end change how it's applied.
Interesting. Do you buy new homes as well? I mean, brand new homes?
Oh yeah. We often work with builders.
Wow.
Like we're working with builders right now on a build to rent, and we make modifications to the floor plan to, fit the kind of unique needs of short-term rentals.
That's neat. That's really neat. Okay, I'm going to go off on another line of questioning if I get into it. Okay, how about a favorite app that you use on a regular basis?
Guesty is our property management software that we use that kind of links everybody together in the company. And then, that'd be a close second with Slack, which is what we use for all of our communications. We had this vendor call the other day and asked our head of communications how committed we were to Slack. And she said, 4 kids, married 30 years, and no prenup.
I love that. What a great answer.
That's how committed we are.
My gosh. I've heard great things about Slack. Especially for larger teams like yours. That's great.
Yeah.
Wow. That's funny. How about a favorite quote?
Love your tenants and never sell. So one of my first bankers told me that.
I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, and this our sort of apocalyptic question here. If you lost absolutely everything, all your assets, and all you had left was $1,000 in cash, and you had wanted to relaunch your real estate business, what would you do with that $1,000?
I'd go start knocking on doors at the nearest kind of recreational lake that has nice houses and putting flyers in them asking if they want me to manage their properties.
Great.
I wouldn't do it at the beach. Too much competition at the beach. You go to Vail and whatever else, too much competition there. But lake properties generate a ton of money as short-term rentals. And there's, unlike beach and mountain communities, there's not a lot of competition on the management side.
That's a great, great tip. Awesome. Wow. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening that would like to find out more about you and what you do. What's sort of the best way for people to do that?
They can go to our website, patriotfamilyhomes.com. That's patriotfamilyhomesplural.com. And there's a link there to kind of get in touch with us and, someone from our business development or a partner engagement team would love to reach out and talk to them.
Fantastic. Wow. Well, gosh, this has been a great interview. What a fascinating business you've got and what a great job you're doing there. Congratulations to you. Well, we have a tradition here, and now you're from Tennessee, East Tennessee here. So you know about hound dogs and stuff like that, right?
That's right.
So come on. You got to close us out with your best old hound dog howl. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Ow!
Right. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Joe. This has been fantastic. Really, really good stuff. And I think our listeners are going to really enjoy it.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it, Bill.
Well, you bet. Well, you take care. And again, thanks for your service to our country and helping out all these vets out there, too, making some big bucks, I'm sure, linking up with you.
Well, thank you. And appreciate all your listeners for giving us the time.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. Well, thank you. I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Now, please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here today and everything that Joe talked about can be accessed in our detailed show notes. So there'll be a lot of detailed answers and also links and so forth to some of the things that Joe talked about. So that's all accessible on our website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode that featured Joe Riley. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.